GN.
Are you getting jiggy with it?
I am exactly doing what you just said, Wendy. I am becoming jiggified. Look who's in the studio. It's our friend Rich Lankoff to talk about all things legal, as we tend to do. Rich, people can listen to your podcast on WGN Plus, right?
It's not called All Things Legal. That's another show I used to do back in the 80s.
This is Legal Face-Off.
That would be a good title also, though.
Yeah. Yeah, how about the Legal Eagles? Do you like that one?
That's a good one. Also Deborah Winger, Robert Redford movie from the 80s.
A long time ago. Let's start out by talking about a very, very sad story. In Branson, Missouri, last week, we had an incident where people on a boat, one of the duck boats, lost their lives because the boat capsized.
I can't stop thinking about this story.
Horrible.
Was it seven people from a family out of nine? Seven passed away?
Yeah.
I can't. Stop thinking about this.
Yeah, obviously, terrible story.
We've all been on a duck boat, haven't we?
I've been with my kids very frequently on duck boats. This is a tragedy. From a legal perspective, we just taped our show, Legal Face Off, and talked about the liability of the boat operator. Inevitably, you will see lawsuits, obviously, from the families, well-deserved. They will probably file in state court. Here's an interesting legal issue, though. There might be limits to their ability to recover under a statute from 1851.
Oh, boy.
Believe it or not, something that's been used in the Deepwater Horizon case, in the Titanic case. There's a law from 1851 that may shield the liability of the operators from damages. The idea behind this law was back in 1851, you wanted to encourage people from engaging in maritime commerce and from buying big ships because you were trying to get that, you know, going. In exchange for engaging in maritime commerce, this law shielded owners from liability for damages. This law, if it applies, would limit the victims of Branson to recover solely the value of the sunken boat, which is nothing, right?
Yeah. I mean,
the value of this boat is almost nothing. So if this law applies, then they would be shielded from liability and the victims could recover almost nothing. Now,
I did read, though, that, excuse me for interrupting you, the NTSB was the one that was in control of these boats because the National Transportation Safety Board, it was a vehicle as opposed to a boat. Does that have anything to do with
it? Yes, and that's why, yeah, exactly true. And I was going to say that's why it can. Maybe this law doesn't apply. In a similar tragedy in Philadelphia a few years ago, the attorneys were successful in keeping this in state court, and I think the average recovery in that case was about $2 million. So, yes, exactly to your point, that would be a reason why this statute would not limit liability and would allow victims to sue in state court.
How does this enter into the storyline? There are reports that passengers aboard the boat said, what about life vests? Should we be throwing life vests on? To which the captain said, no, you know what? No big deal. Don't worry about the life vests.
Yeah.
Negligence, man.
No. Nope.
That boat was rocking. We all saw the videos. At that point, doesn't he say, mayday, mayday, put the life preservers on or life vests?
No question. Everything you're mentioning would be strong evidence in favor of a negligence suit. The jury would hear testimony that exactly what you said. The captain said, you won't need life vests. The captain would hear very significantly testimony, or not the captain, the jury would hear significant testimony about this type of vehicle and the warnings in the past about the canopy. We've all now learned about the canopy being dangerous, the structure of this boat, the fact that there was windows on either side. The inspector who inspected the boat called it a passenger trap.
Yeah.
Basically, it funneled people to only one exit. So all
it's like a baggie.
Yeah, no question.
It gets filled up with water.
Yeah, I mean, I think it would be an easy case. You know, usually these don't get to a jury for obvious reasons. You want to settle it before it gets to a jury. But yeah, the question before a jury, if it got that far, would be all of the evidence that you're mentioning and whether the boat operator neglected its duty of care to passengers.
The other element is the decision to go out on a day where the weather wasn't very suitable to going out on a boat like this. We've all been to an amusement park on a day that's kind of overcast and rainy, and they'll close rides down because they're afraid that the weather could cause some sort of a mishap. Why wouldn't the boat take that into
account? And there was a weather warning that was reported prior to this boat leaving.
Yeah, I've seen that account. I've also seen accounts, however, that the weather came on fairly quickly once they were on the boat. There's a couple of accounts who say that when they first got on the water, it was fairly clear and the weather turned fairly quickly. But no question, the degree to which the boat operator should have followed the weather warnings and not send people out is going to be a huge factor. The other factor, however, to look at in these circumstances is whether there was a waiver, whether there was a release. Typically, before you get on this kind of boat, you often sign a release of liability or a waiver. That could be a factor. Also,
what does that do, really, though?
Well, you know, it's a good question because that does, on the face of it, shield the owner of a carnival ride or a bouncy house or a boat, in this case, from liability. But that is not the end of the story. There are actually several steps that someone who is purporting to use that as a shield of liability has to show for that to be effective. In other words, if you sign a waiver before you go out jet skiing, that does not in of itself shield the owner from liability. If you sue them, they have the affirmative duty to show a couple different things. They have to show that you actually read the waiver, that you were aware of what it said, that the parties were in an equal bargaining position. So the waiver, even though it says very clearly on that the shield is from liability, a crafty lawyer can get around that in court. So in this case, I don't know if they signed a waiver. We haven't seen any reports of that, but that would not be the end of the story. But just one last point on that. You know, you mentioned the weather reports. There would also be an argument. And again, the difficulty for a defendant in these circumstances, as we saw in the MGM case we just talked about on your show last time, the difficulty for a defendant in a sensitive case involving death is you don't want to, you know, turn around and blame the victims. That's what MGM seemingly is doing in their case against the Vegas shooters. In this case, though, you might argue, if you're the defendant, that the passengers assumed the risk of going on the boat when they went on the boat, and they knew that the weather wasn't good, so they assumed the risk. Now, you're making a face. That's the face that a jury would probably make,
but it
is a legal argument that you often see
made. I'm making the face because you'd say to yourself, if you were a potential rider on this boat, these guys do this every day for a living.
Sure.
They should know whether or not this is safe. I don't do this every day, so why would I know?
Absolutely. There's no question that of the two, the operator of the boat who does this every day should be in a better position to assess whether it was safe. But at the end of the day, you know, you are responsible for your actions. And if you assume the risk of doing something that is dangerous, not saying that that's what they did in this case, but that is an argument that would ultimately be made if this case went to a jury.
And all that's all said and done here, these summer storms do just pop up out of the blue. They really do. And it can happen. Some girl got hit by lightning at a concert. It's been happening. Maybe it's just because we're hearing about it more often, but they really do come in unannounced.
Absolutely true. And the fact is, I mean, most of these releases, most of these waivers do mention acts of God as not being covered for that very reason. I mean, you're on the water. It's inherently dangerous. And you assume the risk when you're doing something that's inherently dangerous, even though it seems innocuous, like, you know, a duck boat ride.
Yeah. When a judge or probably a jury is deciding a dollar amount to award, how did they take into account, like, as Wendy pointed out, this family lost seven people. So you got to somehow figure that into the equation, don't you?
No question. You know, the jury, I mean, there's no one answer for that. The jury looks at a lot of different factors, including, and it's, you know, very difficult to put a value on this, and it's very, you know, heartbreaking to when a jury has to make this decision and when an attorney argues it. But one of the key factors is how long they survived. You know, unfortunately, the cold reality of assessing damages is look at. And it's really, Bill and Wendy, by the minute, you know, the longer someone who's dying has to, you know, deal with that, the more damages are. I mean, unfortunately, the quicker you die, the less you're going to recover. And the idea, you know, being you have to suffer. And if you have to suffer there for an hour, you know, that is going to be a huge factor in assessing damages.
Yeah.
But they look at, you know, they look at the age, they look at the family members lost, they look at a lot of different factors.
I can't stop thinking about and a couple horrible. That was married for 45 years or something, a grandma who saved her grandchild, and you had the details on that. She did what?
Yeah, there's a 12-year-old with her grandmother. The grandmother was visiting Branson for the first time. This was the first stop they made in Branson. They had planned to do shows, restaurants, etc. And the grandmother, who was, I think, in her late 60s, her last act was pushing her granddaughter, this 12-year-old, up, and that propelled her to the surface, and she survived. The grandmother did not.
It's heartbreaking. You know,
incredibly sad story.
Wow. All right, let's do this. We'll take a break and then more with Rich Lankoff.
All right. Congratulations to Dave from Glen Ellen, or Glen from Dave Ellen, or Ellen, Dave, and Glen. They are going. They're all going. They need one more person because there's a family four-pack of tickets to the Chicago White Sox versus Kansas City Royals. It's happening Wednesday, August 1st, 7:10 game. Listen for that White Sox sounder, and when you hear it, we'll tell you what caller to be, and then you'll win seats to the Sox all regular season long. Very congratulations are in order to Dave, Glenn, and Ellen. And Sean Spicer has a book out, and he wants you to buy it. So he's going to be on the Steve Cochran Show tomorrow morning at 6:40 to tell you all about it.
It's a sticker fun book.
It should be.
Isn't that amazing?
Can I make a correction? The family that lost loved ones on that boat, that duck boat accident, 9 out of 11 family members, not 7 out of 9.
Even
9
worse.
People, one woman was left and her nephew survived, and it's just terrible.
There's going to be a memorial service on Friday in Indianapolis for them.
So sad.
The Coleman family.
Yeah, awful. Please keep us up to date on the Michael Cohen case. What do we need to know about this, Rich?
Rich Lankoff is here.
So, yeah, I mean, there's no shortage of Michael Cohen news from a legal perspective. It's really interesting because, you know, we've heard about the tapes. There is a lot of calls to release the tapes that he has.
Of the president.
Of the president talking about the Stormy Daniels and also, well, not Stormy Daniels. Actually, the tapes involve the Playboy.
McDougal, Karen McDougal.
Correct. So he tweeted, I think yesterday, that the tapes were privileged and the release of them were illegal. Well, he's wrong, as you might be surprised to hear, being Trump's tweets. But he actually removed the privilege when he released them. He actually released them first to the judge in the probe involving his attorney, Michael Cohen. So those tapes are not privileged. A lot of people are talking about whether it is legal to tape your client. At the time, it's not clear, first of all, whether Michael Cohen was acting as Trump's attorney, right? We've heard a lot of discussion about the fact that Cohen is a fixer. While he's a licensed attorney, he might not have been operating as Trump's attorney. But
how
let's
did
not
they determine that. What do they need to do to figure that out?
That's a great question. I mean, it depends what you know, what the relationship was and whether he was paying him, right? I mean, you can be someone's attorney without being paid, but paying him is one factor. But by all accounts, he wasn't acting as Trump's attorney for this. But, you know, for your listeners, I think it's important to understand the difference between whether taping Trump was a legal act versus whether it was ethical or whether it was privileged. So those are two separate things. New York is what's considered a one-party consent state when it comes to taping someone. In other words, you can tape someone on the phone or in person, even if they did not consent to it. You only need one party's consent to the taping. In this situation, Michael Cohen, obviously because he was taping, was the one who agreed to it. So the fact that Trump did not know he was being taped does not in and of itself mean that it was illegal. Illinois, for example, is a two-party consent state. You and I both have to consent if we're taping a conversation. That's very different. So by all accounts, it appears that the taping was legal.
Can I ask a quick question?
Yeah, of course.
Is that law in place for cases exactly like this?
Absolutely. Cases like this where, you know, you're trying to gather evidence. Whether you agree that that is proper is a different story.
Yeah.
But there are many states that have one-party consent. Now, that's a different story, or that's a different question as to whether an attorney should be taping their client. I mean, by all accounts, you know, I think anyone would tell you that's unethical. That's not right. I've never done that.
Assume everyone's taping you from this point forward, though.
No question it raises a lot of concerns about the relationship. But, you know, I think it's clearly unethical for an attorney to tape his client without the client's consent. But at least in New York, it's legal.
So depending on how deep this goes, if you're Donald Trump's attorney in this, Rudy Giuliani, do you make that your primary argument of whatever is said on this tape, you can't use it in court because you didn't have proper consent? Is that the battle you go for?
It's going to be tough, even though Trump has now said that, you know, the tapes are privileged and disclosing them are illegal. They've already disclosed them.
Right.
So he has waived the privilege. The, you know, client, in this case being Trump, can waive the privilege. The privilege is not absolute. The other thing is, if the tapes involve discussions or plans that involve illegal action by the attorney, that's another reason why they're not privileged. So, you know, we don't know. We don't know what the tapes reveal. You know, Michael Avenatti's been on a couple of different stations this morning talking about how they could touch on those issues and they should not be privileged. But there's no question that they are not privileged anymore because of the president's own actions.
Interesting. That's Rich Lankov. Rich, always a pleasure to talk to you. Always fun to see you. And again, if people want to hear your show, your podcast on WGN Plus, what do they need to do?
They have to go to WGN or WGN Plus, and we're on there. Legal Face Off. We're on everywhere else you find your podcast content, iTunes, and we're all over social media.
And we soon to be a Saturday morning cartoon.
Saturday morning cartoon.
Absolutely. It's gonna be fun.
We have a puppet show on the side. But our latest podcast from our tape just earlier this morning is released today. We had Alan Dershowitz on discussing some of these issues and some other great guests.
Excellent. It's Rich Lankov. We'll take a quick break, and then we'll turn things over to Steve. Stick around. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.